Oh, give me a place where the undead can race, where the smell of fresh meat's in my face, where seldom be found guns with firing live rounds, and there's warmies aplenty to chase. Home, home of undead, where we're free to eat all things not dead, where once you can find a few live-breathing minds and destroy them by munching their head. And destroy them by munching their heads.
And welcome, good librarian, to episode number 84 of Library of the Living Dead. We had that little intro by Uno Shadow, and then one of the old songs that I did on that Casio keyboard called Home of the Undead. Coming right up, we got a song by Midnight Syndicate called Premonition. And that's going to lead us into the new addition to Library of the Living Dead, where we will present full production stories from the book Zombology. This one's by Shane Sullivan. And then we jump right in to another Library of the Living Dead book, Eric S. Brown's Unabridged, Unabashed, and Undead. This one's called Epilogue to the World. We get another cool-ass song by Midnight Syndicate called Born to the Night. And then we gets us a really cool story by Tim Long. It's a flash, and it's called Zombies Ahead, Run. Another song by Midnight Syndicate called Lost Souls, which will lead us right into A.P. Fuchs' Blood of the Dead, Chapter 4. Dead Tide will then be presented, 4 chapters this time. And then, now we got a contest, a contest, a contest. This one is courtesy of wonderful and lovely authoress Rhiannon Frater. Another song by Midnight Syndicate called Dark Tower. Then we're going to have a special section about reviews on Zombology. That'll take us right into a new done-in-one by our great friend from the Netherlands, Zombie Survivor. It's called Melancholy. And then we get another song by Midnight Syndicate called Lurking Fear. Then there'll be some few out comments and some ideas and shit that are going on for Library of the Living Dead Press and Library of Horror Press. And then we get to go out with a song by the lovely Laura Best, a take on I'm on Fire. So, if you find yourself on fire, open up a cold one, pour half of it over your head to put the fire out, and then drink the other half, and then hit the other 6-pack. We's gonna have us a good time. Garen freaking teed. Hey ho, let's go!
cemeteries and vampires who dwell deep within forbidden crypts. Creatures of the night, they rise as darkness descends.
Welcome, good librarians, to the full audio production of all of the stories found in Zombology, a zombie anthology. Every single one will be presented in full production. But that don't mean that you can just listen to them and not buy the book. You guts to buy the book. We need the moolah, so I can start paying for those other things that we got planned for Library of the Living Dead Press. This first story is called Zombie Germs and is written by Shane Sullivan. Zombies have taken over my town. I know they've probably taken over your town too. So what's so special about my little town? Well, one of the kids here, she walks around amongst the zombies and never gets eaten. Can you beat that? I didn't think so. Now, why haven't I been eaten? What makes me so special? Well, I'm glad you ask. See, I'm an agoraphobic. I hide in my room, which so happens to be on the third floor of my office building. I have a giant sunshade on my big windows that oversee all of Richton. That way no one can look in to see me. The only way up to my floor is an elevator that I only use to have food and other amenities sent up to me. I haven't seen or heard a human being in the flesh up close in 10 years. I do talk with my accountant over the phone, but other than that, no human contact. So you see, the zombies never knew I was here. But I'm digressing. I can see that you want to know about the child. Did I tell you that she carries a creepy little doll? No? So hard to think. You see, I haven't had a meal in a week, and my water supply is down to 2 20-ounce bottles and a 3-pack of Juicy Juice. So I'm a little scattered. I wonder if this audio blog will ever be heard. At least my computer works. That's something, right? I still have power to my room, and because I'm also afraid of the dark, I have 2 generators, one solar and one gas-powered. The gas one has stopped working, but the solar one works great. What? Oh, the child. Right, sorry. I haven't talked to anyone so long. Even talking to myself makes me all giddy inside. Okay. The zombies attacked, as you know, 3 weeks ago. I was at my usual spot and sit behind my window looking outside through my telescope. I was watching a waitress across the street at the Posh Gosh Bistro. Her name tag says Sarah, but I call her Super Hottie. I mean, because she's hot. Yeah. Okay, I was watching Super Hottie and talking with some customers and was putting words in her mouth and pretending I was talking with her when a cop car sped on by. So I started following. He was heading out to Basket Bridge. I don't know why it's called Basket Bridge. I noticed that 3 more cop cars had descended on the bridge. This was big. Nothing ever happens here. So I looked through my telescope and was able to see a crowd of people that had been coming across the bridge. I thought at the time it was probably a pro-choice rally or a gay pride parade. Those people never ask for permission. They just do what they want. Did I ever tell you about the time... What? Oh, the bridge. Sorry. The cops got out and I could see what was going on because it was around in the evening and the sky was just getting dark. I have night vision goggles, but I could only see across the street with them, so I couldn't make out what was happening. I did see a lot of flashing, like someone taking a bunch of pictures. So I thought at first maybe Dave from the paper was down there getting the pictures. You know, for the paper. I know now that that was probably gunfire. Next thing you know, the emergency siren for the town goes off. I look back over at the restraint and the rest of the outdoor mall. And everyone's standing and looking around. Then, quickly, people started to leave and go to the parking lot. That's when I looked back over at the bridge and I could barely make out the crowd from the bridge moving towards town. They'd probably be there in 15 minutes. I was thinking this would play hell on traffic, because all the people would have gotten in their cars and headed out by then. I couldn't have been more right. The cars started to stream out of the parking area when the zombies hit the mall, almost en masse. There were still employees in the stores and restaurants. When the zombies attacked, I mean, they were the first to go. I saw a super hottie running for her life, trying to get anyone to let her into a car. But nobody had helped. They all just honked horns and ran into the back of each other. She ran across the street under the eave of my building. Zombies ran after her. I looked back over the main street and people were running for their lives. Zombies were breaking through windshields to get out the people in the cars. It was horrific. Then I saw that the people that had been attacked get up from the ground and attack others. A cop and a little boy came into Yummy Burger, followed by 30 of the zombies. I heard shots, and finally I saw the cop and kid get to the roof. And they sat there for a while, just staring at all the carnage below them. The roof wasn't flat, it was bowl-shaped. It had to be tough to sit on that roof for as long as they did. Around 2 in the morning, my elevator was activated. I quickly ran over to it and turned the key off. I don't know if zombies can push buttons, but I ain't gonna find out. Yeah, it could be super hottie, but yeah, then again it might not. I'm a long distance lover. And I came back to the windows, and on the horizon I could see big flashes. The big city must be overrun too. I wonder if the army would come. You know, like in the movies. But they didn't. 3 days after the main attack on Richton, all I could see was zombies and the cop and kid on the roof. The cop kept yelling towards my window. But what did he think I'd do, open it? There's zombie germs out there. What if I'm not immune? I could catch it. Nah, he can't see me. I can only see him. Around noon, the cop opened the roof hatch and climbed down, just leaving the kid, who I could see was around 13 or 14. I mean, he could have been 12, but he was kind of far off. I heard no more shots, and a few minutes later, he came back up with what I assumed was food. The kid ate and just looked out to the main street of town, which made me hungry. So I went and made me a sandwich. 3 days after the main attack on Richton, all I could see was zombies and the cop and the kid on the roof. 30 minutes later, I was back in my window looking across the way to the Yummy Burger, and the cop was eating the kid. He must have got bit or something. Crawled back up and ate a burger, then changed into one of them and attacked that poor kid. Fast food. They say it'll kill you. On day 5, remember that little kid I told you about? That's when I saw her. She's maybe 5, and she was carrying a doll. You know, one of them China dolls with the pretty angel face. Yeah, one of those. Anyway, that's when I first saw her. She came up the street skipping. I thought for sure the zombies that were just milling about would go for her and have a snack. But they just ignored her. She skipped up to the candy barrel store and went inside and grabbed a big caramel apple. Then she took it and crossed the street and went under my building. I didn't see her again till the next day. Then the next day I got up early and had a bowl of cereal, which used up the last of my milk. I then ran over to the window, grabbed a pair of binoculars, and started looking for Little Miss Muffet. That's what I named her. I didn't see her till 2 p.m. She was playing with her doll, and looked like she was dancing with it. She again got up and walked up Main Street, and this time headed for Plays-A-Lot. It's like a children's toy store. I watched her go in, and for like ever, I didn't see her. Finally, she came back out with a box bigger than her. She pushed it out the door and began setting up a tea set. She put the doll in a little chair and she sat Indian style on the sidewalk. They played tea for a long time. The weird thing was that the zombies just walked around her. You know, like they didn't want to disturb her or something. It started getting dark, the little girl got up and grabbed her doll. You're not going to believe me or anything, but that damn doll looked like it was looking right at me. Now remember, I'm 3 stories up, but I felt like anything that doll was looking right at me. That's creepy. But then again, so are 2,000 undead creatures walking around all night in search of human flesh. Being the last human with flesh, yeah, you can feel me, right? I watched the little girl for 2 weeks, every day. She raided the candy shop, and she played with new toys, and danced with her doll. And ever since first saw her, I swear on my mother's undead eyes that doll was watching me. It knows I'm here. I want to take a shower, but the water isn't running anymore. What if they try to come here? Well, I won't let them in. You know, the zombie germs and stuff. And I could get something. I just can't help them. I hadn't looked outside for a couple days now, but I was getting bored. I was eating too much of my food and was slowly coming to the realization that I'd soon have to get more food. But that meant going outside. Stupid zombie invasion. How the hell is someone going to deliver me food if they're dead? I felt an itch in the back of my brain. I need to see if Little Miss Muffet was still out there. So, this is where we are. I'm hungry. Soon to be thirsty. Can't go outside to get more food. Zombies have attacked, and a little girl with a creepy doll is eating, playing, and dancing the day away. So I'm going to look for her today and hope that maybe I can get her attention. Maybe she can give me some food. Well, maybe. Oh, let's see what we got. Oh my gosh. Wow. The little girl is standing across the street with her doll. And all the zombies are behind her in a long crowd. And that doll's looking right at me. Oh dear. Oh man. They're walking towards the building. There are hundreds of them. They can't get in here, can they? I have the key. The elevator's starting up. How's that possible? That shouldn't be possible. Oh, no. The elevator coming up here. Zombie germs. They're coming to get me. Stupid doll told them where I was. Hi. I see you brought Super Hottie with you. Can we be friends? I really like zombies. I mean, not enough to be one, mind you. I have Juicy Juice. And remember, good librarians, this book, Zombology, a zombie anthology, is now available at CreateSpace and Amazon.com for only $14.95. It's full of the weirdest, strangest, different, and unique stuff that you have ever read about zombies. I think Shane just done him up a good one right there. Please go to Amazon.com and buy Zombology, a zombie anthology by Library of the Living Dead Press. The more moolah we get, the more I'm going to shove it into new books so that you can read. Stay tuned next episode for a new full production story from Zombology, a zombie anthology. Presented just for you, good librarians, another story from Eric S. Brown's Unabridged, Unabashed, and Undead. This is entitled Epilogue to the World. Russell awoke to face another day. Sunlight was pouring into his bedroom from the large sliding glass door at the side of his room. He rolled out of bed, clad only in a ragged pair of boxers, rubbing at his eyes as he staggered into the bathroom. There were no stories to send out this morning, no conference calls with his agents and publisher, nothing at all hanging over for him to do, and he missed it. He looked at himself in the mirror and wondered who he saw looking back. The apparition in the mirror's glass couldn't possibly be him, could it? The man in the mirror was in his early 30s, with pale skin, bloodshot eyes, and had gone days without a shave. Russell picked up his toothbrush, ignoring the image watching him in the mirror, and started his day. He dry-brushed, combed his matted hair, and slid into a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. He picked up the rifle propped beside the sink and made his way back through the bedroom, pausing a moment to make sure the rifle was loaded and ready before sliding the heavy glass door to the balcony open and stepping outside into the cool morning air. He'd bought this room from the hotel when he'd left Diana and his child. He had the money, and it just seemed such a practical solution at the time. He hadn't been able to cope with family life. After nearly 6 years of marriage and 2 months of being a father, he had to escape. It had been killing his creative spirit and holding him back in his career as a novelist. He'd always thought of himself as a writer, not a father. And the legacy he longed to leave to the world was not a child, but one of words on paper. He imagined that Diana and little Raven, their daughter, were dead now. Most everyone was these days. As he stepped outside, he could hear them in the streets below, their hungry moans and cries drifting upwards to him on the wind. He walked over to the balcony's edge and looked down onto a sea of reanimated dead. They were everywhere. Rotting, stinking bodies of those who were once human, but were now merely mindless monsters milling around in search of someone still breathing, like him, to sink their yellowed teeth into. He drew the bolt of the rifle back, chambering his shell, and picked a target. He chose a man with blood-smeared gray hair through the scope, and pulled the trigger, splattering the man corpse's brains onto the street. Destroying one of the dead was part of Russell's morning ritual these days. He supposed it didn't matter. He couldn't kill the whole city of dead, but it made him feel better sometimes, like a tiny scrape of vengeance against the hordes who had taken his world from him. He placed the rifle against the balcony's railing and plopped down into the lawn chair he had set up there long ago. He sunk his head into his hands and wept. If he'd stayed with his family, he'd be dead now. There was no question of that, and not just creatively speaking. The world and the war were lost. He'd given up so much to be able to continue with his career as an author. But there was no one left to read his work, no one to praise his talent, no one to remember him. The written word had offered him immortality, like Stephen King or Shakespeare. But who was left to even remember them now, other than himself? The dead were incapable of anything but hunger and violence. For over a week, Russell had been in the building alone, with only their howls as company. His last neighbor, two floors below, had finally met the fate of the rest of the world when the dead had stumbled their way inside the building and by chance had found her apartment. Russell could still remember the sound of her screams that night as they broke through her boarded up doors and ate her alive. Since then, he'd destroyed the stairwell leading up to his floor. There was no power for the elevators, so he knew he was safe, rationally. But the demons of his fears were still eating away at him inside. Decay. Decay and death were all that were left in the world. The dead would clear the world of all that remained of the living, and time would do the rest. Buildings and monuments would crumble. The roads would be overgrown by grass and weeds. The accomplishments of mankind would be washed away. Russell knew he wouldn't live long enough to see it happen, but there was no use in denying that it would. At long last, he stopped putting off the one thing he could do to be free from the nightmare around him. Without getting up, he reached for his rifle where it sat resting and took it in his hands lovingly. Today would be the first day of the rest of his life. And he opened his mouth and slid the barrel inside. And you good librarians can support Library of the Living Dead Press and Eric S. Brown by going to Amazon.com or CreateSpace and pick up a copy of Unabridged, Unabashed, and Undead. A collection of Eric S. Brown's best zombie short stories. All we've gotten are 5-star reviews for this collection. Not one person has had a bad thing to say about it. The sales need to increase. I'm asking you, pick up a copy of this wonderful tome. I know zombie short stories. And I know good zombie short stories. And I know great zombie short stories, because I put those great ones all into Unabridged, Unabashed, and Undead. Buy a copy today.
Born of the night, we are. Thank you.
This short flash story is by Timothy W. Long. You'll know Timothy soon. He's going to be in all the other Zombology and other books that'll be put out by Library of the Living Dead. He posted this on the forum and stated, "I love flash fiction. In fact, my very first sale was a 525-word piece to Alien Skin magazine. This little piece was inspired by a picture Dr. Puss has for his podcast. It's entitled, Zombies Ahead, Run." Dan reaches across his lap with his left hand because the other is full of steering wheel and his BlackBerry. He picks up his cup of Americano, hand catching a blast of air conditioning which is poured directly at the dark brew. Coffee in hand. Sniff the burned beans. Sip. And oh yeah, that's the shit. Ice cold and chug-a-lug, it goes down smooth as butter. He punches the gas as the caffeine slams into his body. The new Mustang answers with a rumble that presses him into his seat as he whips up the residential road. "Did that sign say 25? He wonders as his car hits twice that. OMW, babe. He manages to get off on the handheld before a giant orange sign interrupts the skyline. Around a corner, on the shoulder, catty corner as if someone had hit the thing and bounced it halfway into the road. He swerves sharply, but not before he lets out a loud laugh, coffee snorting out his nose, down his shirt, and across his new slacks. Some of it splashes onto the floor, and some gleams rudely from his leather steering wheel like snot with a sneer. Zombies ahead. Run! As the car recovers from the fishtail, he has to slam on the brakes and swerve off the road so as not to hit a worker with a big red stop sign. The rest of his coffee takes the opportunity to splash all over the passenger side seat. Motherfucker! He yells at the stupid man. A group of workers mills behind the traffic guy. They're all staring down at a figure on the ground. Is someone hurt? John's out of the car in a flash as his temper peaks. Hey! Are you guys working or jacking off? I need to get through, he yells at the sign holder, who instead of stepping back under the withering tirade, drops the big red octagon sign with an ear-numbing clatter and stumbles forward. Claws for hands covered in red gooey fluid, and it appears that part of his neck is missing. Ha, fucking ha. I know zombie kung fu, so back the fuck down. The other workers follow the sound of his voice. They shamble towards him, stagger near him. One even crawls because his leg seems to be smashed flat along the meaty part of his thigh. Then the smell hits him, and Dan is no longer amused. It's like the time he had to go under the old house and bring out his retriever, Rusty, dead a full week in the July sun. He's trembling, and when the first worker reaches for him, Dan throws his hand up to block, but ends up grasping a shirt sleeve slick with blood and something rubbery, something he doesn't want to think about. Oh, shit! Then the others are on him, and he's flailing his arms like a speed-fueled preacher at an all-night Denny's. Can I get an amen? A guy with one arm reaches at him, and he bats it aside. He hauls off and punches the first worker in the face, but doesn't tense, and his wrist snaps like a twig. Grasping it to his chest, he turns to run, but they're on him like a slow swarm. A bite sinks into his shoulder, and a moaning woman, no less than 6'6" and built like an all-star linebacker, takes off part of his left hand with teeth the size of dominoes. They're covered in green gunk, and Dan thinks that he'll need a tetanus shot when this is over. Another worker bites a chunk of his throat, and one more tears at his leg, but gets a hold of his balls and yanks them hard. Dan tries to scream, but he can't find one particular sensation to focus on as his body is torn to shreds.
Thank you.
Welcome, good librarian, to A.P. Fuchs' Undead World Trilogy, Blood of the Dead. This is Chapter 4. April licked Joe's hand as he laced up his boots. They were army issue. Perry got back in his mid-teens when he was enrolled in Air Cadets for a short time. Fortunately for him, he'd maintained the same shoe size since ninth grade, so the scuffed black boots fit even now. Steel-toed, they had saved his life on more than one occasion when the undead tried to turn him into one of their own, a kick to their skulls rescuing him from a life imprisoned inside the shell of a human corpse. "Sorry, pal. You can't come with me," he told his dog, and strapped on his knee pads. He stroked the patch of brown hair on her head, then kissed her on the nose. She licked his nose in return. Their little exchange before he went out each night. Though April was only a dog, she was the closest thing he had to a friend, and, he supposed, she'd be the closest he'd ever have to someone to come home to. Killing the undead was easy emotionally, but leaving the dog behind each evening was always hard. To lose his buddy, Joe didn't want to think about it. He had already lost enough loved ones as it was. April, the girl from a life when things were normal, his best friends, and his family. He gave his pet one final scratch behind the ears, then exited his apartment and locked it. "I'll be back soon," he called through the door. Opting not to use its holster, he held the X-09 through his trench coat as he headed outside, prepared to make the transition between the safety of his home to the uncertainty of the streets. He lived in the Haven. The only question that hung over him each day was, for how much longer? The power lines would inevitably go down, and he, like the others who lived in the area, would be in the dark, just like everywhere else in the city. Walking down the sidewalk, Joe glanced up at the gray, cloudy sky. Tonight, the gray was blotched deep brown in parts, like someone had splashed coffee against it. He remembered the days when the area used to be teeming with people, cars, kids on bikes zipping down the sidewalk, the area he grew up in. His parents' place had been 7 streets down, and theirs was the first place he hit after coming home from the days of walking the streets after being at April's. Even now, a year later, he remembered walking up his folks' driveway, the house lights off, both outside and in. He didn't need to be a pessimist to know his mom, dad, brother, and sister were already dead. The question at that point had been, how dead? He remembered it clearly. Armed with a knife from his kitchen and a baseball bat, he cautiously approached the front door. After taking a deep breath, he pressed down on the tab above the handle and pushed. The door moved slightly, but no further. Locked? Maybe they're all right. He dug in his jean pocket and pulled out his keys. He still had a key to the place, even though he no longer lived there. Joe unlocked the door, pressed down on the tab above the handle again, and pushed. The old door swung open with a creak. Listening carefully for any sign of life, he stood there, knife at the ready, his other hand tightly gripping the bat. It was quiet within. "Hello?" No reply. Exhaling slowly, he went in, scanned the front landing to make sure the coast was clear, then proceeded into the living room. Everything seemed fine. The black leather couches on the white carpet sat untouched, just as his mom liked it. Those couches were off-limits the moment his parents got them. Joe never understood the point in having them if you couldn't sit on them. The dining room beside it was also empty and intact. His mom's fake fruit centerpiece still in the middle of the large oak table, a few pieces of mail on a nearby chair. He went over to the envelopes and checked the postmarks. Days old. They were still sealed, and it wasn't like his parents to leave mail unread for longer than a day. "Mom? Dad? Hello?" Silence. A pinch at the back of his throat. He swallowed twice, one not being enough to suppress the itch that surfaced back there. Heart beating quickly and steadily, he went to the kitchen. At the entrance, his jaw slackened and a flush of heat came over him. The dual-window kitchen door that led out onto the patio was in pieces. Murky red blood coated the jagged pieces of glass still in its frame, and a streak of dark red painted the white and gray squared linoleum floor, as if something or someone had been dragged across it. The creeping feeling that someone might still be in the house tugged at Joe as he went for the kitchen door. He just hoped that if someone was inside, they were alive and not dead. Joe peered through the broken glass. The backyard looked the same as the last time he visited, except everything was muddied over with awful gray stuff that had fallen from the sky. Pools of blood and smears of meat blotched the patio in hideous red, the smell of it having set out in the open so long, sending his stomach into twists and twirls. He swallowed again, a lump forcing its way down his throat. His voice squeaked. He cleared his throat. Anybody? The word was so quiet that he doubted that anyone would hear him. Mom? Dad? Tears pooling at the bottom of his eyes, he stepped outside and tried to avoid stepping in the patches of blood. He dropped the knife and bat. The edge of the bat struck his toe through his shoe, but he didn't care. To his left, on the patio table, were the heads of his family, his fathers and sisters sitting side by side, his mothers and brothers lying on their ears, eyes locked onto each other, frozen terror on their faces. Blood coated the table and rimmed it by its legs. Mind blank, Joe numbly walked towards him, unable to think. He glanced to his feet, his shaking hands, then finally to the yard. There were no bodies, just a few patches of intestines, a blood-soaked arm, and a sheet of skin. Joe couldn't breathe. His heart banged so hard inside his chest, he thought he was going to faint. Green stars rimmed his vision, and a shadow crept in along the edges of his sight. He felt lighter than air. The last sound he heard was his head hitting the patio wood. Now, walking down the sidewalk in the Haven, Joe still couldn't believe he'd gotten out of there alive, that the zombies hadn't come for him. If any had entered his parents' yard while he was unconscious, they might have left him alone, somehow thinking he was already dead and not worth their time. He'd never know if that was the case or not. Joe pulled out the X-09 and held it tight with his right hand. He no longer teared up at the memory of losing his family. For this, he felt shame. Either he had accepted their deaths or had grown so cold and bitter that he didn't care. But if I feel bad about not caring, then I have to care, right? Whatever, he said softly, and pulled out an old port cigar from the inner pocket of his coat. From the side pocket he produced a box of wooden matches, stopped walking, lit the tobacco, then continued. The smell of the smoke sometimes drew out the dead. He hoped he'd run into one or two. Each time he blew one away, he felt a little better about himself and reclaimed a little piece of the lives the undead had stolen from him and everyone else. Many nights, he had wandered around, thinking about what he was doing. And many nights he realized how stupid it was when he stepped back and took a hard look at it. He was playing vigilante, trying to be like the superheroes he had written about before the world fell to hell. But at the same time, he had also gained a keen understanding of the catharsis this brought and the amazing feeling of trying to set something right when everything had been set so wrong. Didn't care if others noticed. So far as he knew, no one did. There were others like him anyway, guys and girls who went around with guns and killed as many of the undead as they could. Without them, the city would be in far worse shape. The military that had been dispatched to each city nationwide after the rain fell had lasted only a short time before the undead bulldozed them like a pack of raptors hungry for the kill. The cops were all dead. Even those like him. Well, there weren't as many out there as there used to be. But thankfully, there were still some out there. Hopefully, they'd still be able to make a difference before it was too late.
Thank you. You see that?
Says Tulaski, pointing up the hall ceiling.
Yeah, some type of attic stair, right?
Yes, I want you to watch it while I check these rooms.
He waits until he sees Keller nod, then kicks the first door in. He goes in low, gun moving wherever he looks, pointing the same way. Sees a small bedroom, complete with a bed, dresser, nightstand, and a TV mounted on the wall. Faded football banners and awards cover the wall to his right. A doorless closet gapes across the bed from him, with only a handful of clothing hanging and a lot of empty hangers. No one is under the bed.
Clear.
And exits the room. Takes a deep breath and exhales slowly. One more room and the attic to go. No sweat. At least he has a friend who just happens to be a trained soldier at his back. Just thinking about doing something like this with Dodd for a backup gives him the creeps.
You're doing just great, Matt. We're almost through.
No problem, Nick.
The next door isn't shut firmly. A mere touch will probably open it, but he kicks it anyway. No one is there. There's a king-size bed, two dressers, two nightstands, and a couple of nice paintings. A soft, pale green carpet covers the floor, and cream-colored drapes hang in front of the two windows. There are two doors. One is open and leads to a large bathroom. There's a sink, bathtub, and toilet, but no people in there. The second door must be a closet. The doors are wood and slatted. They're made to slide open on a track. If he kicks them in, more than likely they won't open, but will just shatter. The tension is building within him. He goes to one knee and looks under the bed. Nothing. In the background, almost below conscious thought, he feels arthritic pain in that knee as he stands back up, but manages to ignore it. He walks around the bed and pauses beside the doors. He grasps a small wooden knob and pulls. The door folds accordion style, and he sees a big walk-in closet, shoes on the floor and clothes hanging on all three sides. Empty.
Clear.
Keller is still watching the attic door. There's a pull cord hanging from it.
I'll bolt open. You be ready to shoot if you have to.
Tulaski nods. Best to get this over quickly. Keller gives a mighty heave, probably overdoing it. The door opens up and down into place. It is, in fact, an attic stair of good construction. It probably would take Keller's 300-pound-plus frame. Nothing happens.
Dark up there.
Yeah.
He points his flashlight up and sees a section of wood frame.
Be right back.
He takes the stairs as fast as he can. There's one window in his room. No screen, just a window. It faces the backyard and a Norfolk pine tree. The tree is so close that its branches must be trimmed occasionally to keep them out of his room. The roots are also causing a problem with the house's foundation. He knows this because it's a frequent argument between his parents. There never seems to be money to get the tree cut down and removed. He doesn't want this to happen anyway. He loves the sound the tree makes when the wind blows through its leaves. Down below, he hears the angry man kick the door to his brother's room. He knows it won't be long before they find him. His shoes are tied, and he stuffs some extra clothes and a blanket and a pillow in his school book pack. After a moment's hesitation, he stuffs the bear in, along with the other stuff. His window is open, and a little breeze stirs the curtain.
I won't be afraid. I can do this.
Somewhere below him, he hears another door bounce off a wall. He reaches out and puts his hand around a thick branch. He can also hear voices in the front yard, and pauses to listen to them. Just some adults yelling at each other. He swings a leg out, steadies himself, then commits his weight with his other leg. Then, the unimaginable happens. The branch snaps between his feet, and he loses his grip. His stomach lurches as he falls backwards. In a moment or two, the crowd is gone, leaving only Bronte, Trax, and the two police officers, Dodd and Williams. The paramedics have entered the house, following the sergeant. Dodd has wandered over to his cruiser and is talking on a cell phone. Trax is waiting for him a half a block down by his car. Williams asks him to make a written statement. He's just finished it. He hands her the clipboard.
Thank you for the help, says Williams, just as he starts to walk away.
It was just the truth, officer.
Why don't you apply to the academy before it's too late, Bronte?
Too late? What do you mean, officer?
Williams looks at him. She isn't bad-looking for a woman in her 30s. He wonders what her interest is in him.
You know what I mean, Bronte. It's only a matter of time before you screw up. Pimping, dealing drugs, maybe? The odds are against you. At least get a job and go to college.
You don't know nothing about me, woman. I'm in charge of my life. I'm no criminal.
If that's true, what are you doing here when you just happen to see the shooting? I know you don't live around here. You weren't looking for your brother's killer by chance, were you?
He doesn't answer. He notices that she has a look of... Is that compassion in her eyes?
Go home, Bronte. Give us a chance to find him. It's our job.
You've had your chance. 2 months is a long time. I'm a righteous man and I have waited, but no one can find him.
She reaches out and grabs his arm.
I know your mama, Bronte. Don't you go and do something that might leave her alone. If you die, she dies with you.
He pats her arm and turns away.
I'm already dead, officer, but I hear you. Thanks.
He's walking away when he hears what sounds like branches snapping, a child scream, and then a thud. He looks back at Williams, and both of them run towards the house. The goddamn cell phone won't work. The keypad lights up, but every time she tries to call, she gets the message, "All circuits are busy." She's only 2 blocks away from US 19, a major road. But at this hour, on a weekday, everything except the Waffle House and maybe a big motel will be locked up and closed. The road she's found herself on is probably the seediest section of Pinellas Park. For a stretch of about 3 blocks, it's nothing but a trailer park, an auto repair shop, junkyard, and a couple of old decrepit apartments, and a palm reader. Several dirt roads lead off into a neighborhood to the east along the way. Presently, she's standing across the street, her back to a derelict building, listening to the dogs bark in the junkyard. There must be 5 or 6 of them in the fenced-in area. Apparently, she got too close as she ran blindly away from the ditch. She stands in the front, under an overhanging second-story porch. The building would have some character if it wasn't falling apart. Her mind's racing. I should just call the cops on a payphone. They're going to catch me anyway, and it was self-defense. The dogs are driving her crazy, getting on her already jumpy nerves. I need to get away from the dogs first. She hurries around the corner of the building. Its windows are all boarded over, and a lock is on the front door. She pauses at the building's edge, roughly 4 blocks down, across a normally busy intersection. She can see the halfway tavern. It's past closing time for any bar in town, but the sign is still lit, and she can see lights. The convenience store next door to it is also open. Still, what happened to the stoplight there? It's out. She can only see that far by the light of the moon, and a lone car that barely slows as it crosses over. The car decides it for her. She will go to the convenience store and call the cops from there. And remember, good librarians, you still have a chance to purchase Stephen A. North's Dead Tide. We're heading towards 350 sales, and I want to thank each and every one of you good librarians for picking up the book. Stephen and I are just tickled to death with the sales. This is an incredible amount of sales for a first novel. Well, second novel, if we're going to count Beneath the Mask, and I sure as hell am, because that was an excellent novel too. But this is his first zombie novel. And guess what? He's now working on Dead Tide 2. So pick this book up.
Get on the undead train. Get caught up. Read ahead. Know what's going to happen. Because before you know it, you're going to have to buy Dead Tide 2 by Library of the Living Dead Press. And thank you, Stephen, for being not just such a great author, but a wonderful friend. Buy the book.
Now we got a contest. Now we got a contest and free swag for you. If you enter, you may win it, but if you don't, well, forget it. Cause now we got a contest with free swag for you.
Greetings, good librarians and rabid zombie lovers. This is Rhiannon Frater, author of the As the World Dies Zombie Trilogy. I'm here to talk to you about a special contest that the Library of the Living Dead podcast and I am doing just for you. I recently received a shipment of GIMPed books. What does that mean? Well, evidently there was a printer issue, and the books don't have page numbers, and the mini chapters are missing their headings. Now, this doesn't take away from the story at all. It's all there with all its zombie goodness, and there's plenty of Jenny and Katie fun to be had. But I don't know what else to do with the books except to give them away to you guys. So here's the idea. You send me an email telling me who your favorite character is and why. Don't just make it one sentence, but actually sell me on why you love my character. Dr. Puss and I are going to pick the 10 top entries and read them on the podcast. And those 10 lucky people are going to get an autographed copy of the As the World Dies Fighting to Survive GIMPed book. So what can you do with a GIMPed book? Well, write an Amazon.com review. That would be awesome. But also, hey, maybe one day you can sell on eBay for tons of money when this book series gets made into a mini-series. Or maybe a movie. Or maybe I'm just wishful thinking. So, if you're interested in your own autographed copy of As the World Dies Fighting to Survive, and you might just get a little something extra like a sneak preview of As the World Dies Siege, send me your reason why you love my character at gothgoddessrhea@gmail.com. Again, that's gothgoddessrhea@gmail.com. For more information about the contest, or just to refresh your memory, you can check out rhiannonfrater.blogspot.com for more information, and also check out the forum for the Library of the Living Dead podcast. Thanks again for all your support for my books, and if you want a GIMP book, it's yours for the taking. Just enter and win.
Abandon all hope, ye who enter here. Thank you.
reviews. I was thinking maybe that you good librarians would like to hear some of the reviews for Zombology that have been posted on Amazon.com. So far, we've got 6 reviews, and all of them are 5 stars. The first one's by Rob Fox. He states, "As far as anthologies go, this is one of the best I've ever read. From the first story to the last, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. Some stories had me laughing out loud, while others had me crawling under my covers. Every story had something different, and no 2 stories were alike. I've read other anthologies, and while they were good, they contained the same slow-moving zombie after people trapped in a house storyline. Of all the stories, I don't remember even one with people trapped in a house." This one's by Michelle McCrary, dead mama to you good librarians. She states, "Hi, this is Michelle McCrary, and I have a story in this book. Now, I'm not going to talk about it, though I want to talk about all the other wonderful stories in it. I've been very impressed with each and every one I've read. They're all entertaining in their own special way. I especially enjoyed Stop Requested by Rhiannon Frater, but I can't really say I have one favorite. They're all awesome. This is one great addition to the library of any zombie fan. More Zombology anthologies are coming soon, so keep an eye out." Our next one is by D. Schuler, Literary Gadfly. He states, "Zombology is a great addition, bringing together a wide range of variations on the zombie theme. Each of the 22 stories is distinctive and unique, exploring different aspects of life in a world where the dead walk. We see a number of familiar themes through the post-apocalyptic lens. Lost love, betrayal, revenge, helplessness, hopelessness, and, believe it or not, hope. Fans of the genre will appreciate the many different takes on the zombie plague itself. Sometimes it's a viral outbreak. Sometimes the cause is unknown. Some zombies shamble, others sprint. Some are monsters to be despised. Others are tragic characters, worthy of sympathy, if not affection. Even if you're not a particular fan of the zombie-themed horror, you'll appreciate the different styles and points of view. Each author has contributed a unique voice to the anthology, and each has broadened the genre in small but significant ways. I look forward to subsequent volumes in this anthology series. If Zombology is any indication, the Zompocalypse is a dark and colorful world, and we've only just scratched the surface. You'd better get that scratch clean, by the way, before you develop any weird and overpowering cravings." This review is by J.C. Vokey. "This is a great collection of stories. Loads of fun and, what can I say, full of zombies. I wasn't sure of it at first, but what the heck. I figured why not give some new authors a chance. I've been reading the same kind of stories by the same people, and I needed to read something different. It was a welcome change. And although I won't spoil the enjoyment of the stories for you, I will say that it's worth the money. I have to admit, I'm a bit biased, since I really enjoy zombie stories anyways. But if you're in the mood for a bit of the Z, you won't go wrong with this book." This review is by P.D. Handsome. He states, "A bizarre and eclectic mix of all things zombies. This collection boasts 22 tales of the living dead and cannibalism gone right. Enjoyable from the beginning to end. These are some of the best independent authors. And I want to thank you good librarians and good readers
who posted these wonderful reviews on Amazon.com. You'll have a chance to post a review too. Buy the book, read the book, post a review. I really am proud of the way that Zombology, a zombie anthology, turned out. It's a very, very different book from most of the anthologies put out there. And I'm very happy with all of my good librarian authors who contributed to make this such a special book. Undead love to you all, Dr. Puss. This Done in One is by Zombie Survivor and entitled The Melancholy of Survival. Dark clouds slowly drifted towards Rick as he stood on the roof of his apartment building. As he looked through his binoculars, a terrible world unfolded beneath him. This was a decaying world, the world that seemed to forget the once-perceived immortal civilization of man. But as long as Rick remembered the world it once was, it would never be lost completely. He sometimes thought about the children playing on the street and showing each other the newest toys their parents had bought them. He'd smile when he thought about the couples that were lying in the grass, enjoying the warmth of the sun and their undying love. He'd giggle when he remembered his neighbor, Mr. Manson, trying to look young with stupid clothes and wigs that looked so fake that Rick wondered if he was entirely serious with this or that he was just fooling around. He'd occasionally smell freshly baked bread from the bakery and the awful aftershave of one of his colleagues at work. The chain-link fence that conveniently surrounded the complex began to rust and weaken under the exposure of the elements, the lack of maintenance, and the weight it constantly endured from the thousands of dead bodies that were pushing against it. Rick tried to look at the corpses that tried to get at him from way down below. Maybe someone he knew was down there somewhere, desperately trying to get his attention in the midst of the sea of the decaying bodies. He looked at their hollow gazes, their gaping mouths, and their clothes caked with dirt and gore from their struggles and victims they'd grabbed with their greedy claws weeks ago. Rick wondered what the smell must be like. He smelled a couple of them, and it always felt like his nostrils were on fire. Imagine what a crowd of them would be like. It'd be impossible not to puke your guts out. A lonely crow seared above Rick's head, swooped down and glided inches above the skulls and snatched a few bugs that festered and reproduced too happily on them. Other birds soon followed his example, and within minutes, the creature seemed to be declared a walking buffet for the avian creatures that lived in the area. Was the crow the first one that tried to eat off them? Did he pick the shortest straw? Things must be really wrong with the natural world if they considered eating the vermin that lived within the cold bodies of the monsters that were once humans. The media called them zombies, but Rick called them a nuisance that held him back to explore and get some necessary supplies. A bright flash of light ripped through the clouds. An ominous rumbling in the distance made the birds flee from their feast. The zombies looked behind them with a curiosity Rick hadn't seen since he fooled his small nephew by suddenly letting his cell phone ring. They had the same posture, the same look in their eyes, as if they had them, and even the same kind of noises. It made Rick feel uncomfortable and made him wonder how smart these things really were. He'd seen dozens of them plummet into the water when they followed a boat filled with evacuees. They often walked against windows, glass doors, and walls, like the flies that Rick observed in his childhood when they tried to get inside the house to feed off the delicious pie that was standing on the table in the dining room. Zombies may not be the most intelligent creatures on the planet, but Rick never made the mistake of underestimating them. He could easily defend himself against an individual zombie. But, like roaches, if you see one, there's always many others nearby. So, he was always cautious. The bastards can sneak up on you, especially if you're wandering in deserted buildings or when it was getting dark. But normally, you could smell them long before they had a chance to sink their broken teeth into your warm, juicy skin. A raindrop fell on the binoculars, distorting Rick's view. He looked up at the sky and felt more raindrops falling on his face and the dry, cracked concrete that surrounded him. He looked at the dark circles that were rapidly growing in size and numbers. Another rumble. Like a predator desperate to get his prey. Just like the ones below him. Never giving up. Never realizing that when they had the opportunity to get him, they would probably be nothing more than piles of bones and clothing. The rain intensified and made everything seem hazy. The zombies below didn't notice anything, except that some of their mouths were slowly filling up with water. It seemed that the birds had places to bathe when they returned.
macabre version of a birdbath you always saw in the park or in someone's garden. The soaking wet clothes made Rick shiver. He was forced to go back inside. It wouldn't be wise to get pneumonia in a time like this. He'd seen enough to know that help wasn't coming today. The rumbling from the thunder decreased as he closed the door behind him and walked down the stairs to his hideout. Rick could never get used to the contrast between the fresh air outside and the musty and old smell inside the building. He coughed a couple of times and checked his watch. It was almost time. The penthouse he confiscated when he found the building was, considering the situation he was in, not a cluttered mess you'd expect from a man that lived for almost 6 months in solitude. Rick had neatly stacked the supplies in the corner of the room. The trash and waste were tightly sealed in garbage bags and surrounded with mouse traps, just in case a rodent wanted to try to tear the bags open and scatter filth all over the place. The rest of the apartment was a little dusty, but that was because he couldn't waste water over something as trivial as dust. He'd occasionally wipe the dust off with a rag or a piece of cloth, but not as much as he wanted to. He hung the binoculars and his jacket on the coat hanger in the hallway and let himself fall on the large couch. He stared at the ceiling and listened at the rains softly thumping against the windows. He sighed and looked at his watch again. Still a few more hours to go. Then he would be ready. He turned his head and watched his reflection in the television. He looked like hell with his bushy beard and pale skin. But still, he'd lost the weight he wanted desperately to lose when he was in the gym. Rick stood back up and walked slowly to the kitchen. He glanced at the radio he installed in the corner of the room. Broken. After finishing his meal that only consisted of canned food and the last bottle of beer, he walked to the bathroom. He ran his hands through his beard and chuckled. It really had to come off. He didn't want to look like a caveman when they would first see him. First impressions are vital, and the possibility to be mistaken with a member of one of the motorcyclist gangs that were pillaging and destroying everything in their path was something he didn't want to think about. He grabbed a pair of scissors and started to trim the beard. With every cut, he slowly returned to his normal appearance. He smiled and felt rejuvenated again. He walked back to the living room and looked outside. It was still raining heavily. Rick shrugged. It didn't matter what the weather conditions were. They promised that they would be here in a couple of minutes, so there was no time to waste. He grabbed his backpack and filled it with the right necessities for the trip. Rick's hands were trembling from excitement, and he could barely restrain himself from screaming and dancing like an idiot. A few weeks ago, when the radio still worked, he made contact with a group of survivors. After a brief conversation, they decided that it would be best if Rick joined them, so they agreed that they would meet in a couple of weeks. He walked down the stairs with newfound enthusiasm, like his body suddenly had found reserve energy that was stored away somewhere. He quickened his pace, passing the signs that indicated which floor he was on. 5. 4, 3. Every step he took, every floor he passed, made him more aware that he would finally see living humans again. After months of suffering, after months of thinking that he was the only one that survived the apocalypse, he was going to find peace at last. He jumped from the last 3 steps and landed with a dull thud on the floor. He looked at the barricaded swing doors of the main lobby. He nodded. It would be the last time that he worried about zombies getting in. He pressed on and noticed that the tiles that decorated the main lobby were still shining like nothing had happened. He saw his own reflection, if not a bit smudged, beneath him. The last time that he was puzzled about this sort of thing. He moved the heavy furniture that he had propped against the doors and opened it. A strong wind blew the rain, dead leaves, twigs, and litter into the lobby. Rick shielded his face from the flying debris. This was getting a little heavier than a normal storm. He watched at the disfigured shapes still standing motionless at the fence. He raised his middle finger and laughed. Bastards.
The zombies moaned excitedly as Rick ran outside, and they slowly followed him. Some of them tripped over their own feet, fell on the ground with wet slaps, and were trampled by their brothers and sisters. Others simply couldn't move because of weeks of immobility and caused their legs to be extremely rigid. They just stood there, staring at Rick, who got smaller and smaller by the second. Rick heard the moans and snapping jaws behind him, but it didn't matter. They were too slow, and he was almost at the gate of the parking lot behind the apartment building. He grabbed the handle and pushed it open. He smiled. His theory that these pathetic creatures couldn't use doorknobs or handles were correct. That's why he barricaded the main lobby. It's a safety precaution if the zombies did find out how to open the gate. He stared at the abandoned streets. There was nothing. No cars, no heavily armed men, no friendly faces. He looked at his watch. There was something wrong. They told him that they would be here by now. The first zombie shambled into Rick's view, a man with his rib cage and stomach ripped open, revealing an enormous cavity filled with maggots and worms. The zombie came closer with his arms outstretched and continuously moaning. Rick grabbed a gun, the last weapon he'd ever used against a zombie, and shot the man in the head. A fountain of blood erupted behind the man's skull, and it crashed down in a puddle. The water turned black from the blood that had been congealing in his skull. Other zombies from the streets also wandered towards him, undoubtedly attracted by the sound of the gunshot. They were all in advanced stages of decay. Most of them were bloated to a point that their stomachs would erupt at any time. Rick ran back to the apartment building, closing the gates behind him. He took a few steps back and watched the first zombie reaching the gate. They weren't fiddling with the handle. Thank God. He walked back to the building. He would have to wait in the main lobby for a moment until the zombies were quiet again, and he'd go watch for the group of survivors that would soon be his new family. The rain stopped, and the sun was bursting through the clouds, creating beams of light that shone on the zombies and on Rick. He looked back at the gate that was getting more and more attention. Grasping arms were squeezing through the bars, and Rick could see some of them trying to chew through the bars. He finally reached the door of the main lobby. As he opened one of them, a metallic screech made Rick jump. First, he thought it was thunder somehow, but it seemed to come from behind him. He slowly turned around and saw that the fence was going to buckle. He quickly went inside and closed the door behind him. A loud crash made Rick's hair stand up on end. They demolished the fence. He still couldn't believe it. How was that possible? He could already see some of the zombies walking to the entrance with shuffling feet. Rick grabbed the nearest furniture he could find and dragged it in front of the doors. He hoped it would be enough to stop them. As the zombies touched the glass of the doors, Rick stepped back, watching in horror as a zombie pulled one of the doors towards her. She groaned as if she knew what an exceptional accomplishment it was. She then climbed over the furniture and got back on her feet. The zombies that followed her did the same. Before Rick realized it, the lobby was filling up with the walking dead. The bulging, milky eyes of them were fixed at one point. The human that was on their menu for so long. The tasty thing that observed their simple minds and made them wait for weeks was finally within reach. Rick shook his head. Not like this. He was supposed to be rescued today, and nothing could stop him from being reunited with mankind again. He just had to shake them off. He ran to the stairs. They'd follow. Then he would have to wait to come back out. Suddenly, one of his feet slipped, and he tumbled down the stairs. It hurt like hell, and he cursed. He got back to his feet, but was pulled back down by a decomposing hand. He fell once again, this time hitting his chin on one of the marble steps. He felt his teeth break, and he spewed out blood and pieces of enamel. He cursed once more and tried to shake the damn thing off him. He felt another hand, and another, and another. He kicked. He punched and he screamed. did nothing to stop the zombies from having their meal. He felt something sharp penetrating his lower arm. He looked and saw that a zombie was biting him. He was toast, but not without a fight. It took all of his strength, but Rick was able to get back up and let himself fall down the stairs. The zombies were still clinging on to him, even when they all broke their limbs, broke their backs, and snapped their necks to finally collapse in a huge pile of lifeless bodies. A large puddle of black and red blood soon covered the shining tiled floor of the lobby. Serves them right. Bastards. That's it, good librarians, for episode number 84 of Library of the Living Dead podcast. Now, we got a little bit of announcements going on right here, and I'd like you to know about them. Z-Day by Rob Fox is formatted and ready to go as soon as I can get Dan Galley to do the cover and the back cover. Also ready to go is Deadlands by Scott R. Johnson. And also by Scott R. Johnson, we have a Library of Horror release entitled City of Demons, which we also need to get Dan on the cover. Also formatted and ready to go is Cody Boy's Sunrise. And of course, we need Dan to do that cover too. Dan, get your ass back from Vegas and get to work. Zombology 2 is being put together at this very moment. It's full. Zombology 3, another short story zombie anthology, needs about 4 more short stories, and you are invited to send them in to lotldpress@yahoo.com. Please title it Zombology 3. We're also looking for Flash Fiction for Zombology 4. Please title it Zombology 4. Makes sense now, don't it? These ones are Flash Fiction and gotta be 500 words or less. We're also accepting Zombology 6, which is The Undead versus the Living Dead. 6K limit on these ones, so they can be a little longer. And I have just got incredibly good news via email by D.L. Snell. You know that Zombology 6 is all about me getting all giddy and all squirmy and squishy, all about D.L.'s Roses of Blood on Barbed Wire Vines. That was the impetus to put out Undead versus the Living Dead. And DL has offered me to reprint the very first story that really started Roses of Blood on Barbed Wire Vines. And I'm going to put it in Zombology 6. Zombology 5, which is the novella, will need one more novella. If you've got a zombie novella that you would like printed, please send it to lotldpress@yahoo.com. And bonus of all boni,
Guess who's done with his novel? That'd be Robert R. Best. Lakewood Memorial, the first part of his trilogy. It's done. Cause Laura done beat him over the head, made him do it right. So, we're gonna be formatting it, and we're gonna be rocking and rolling on Lakewood Memorial, a novel by Robert R. Best. And I know I've been kind of pleading with you on the books that are already out on Amazon.com, but I really would appreciate, for those of you who haven't picked up the books, please pick up Stephen A. North's Dead Tide, Eric S. Brown's Unabridged, Unabashed, and Undead, and Zombology, a zombie anthology. I really would like to see the sales increase on these things, because I've already told you, I don't make shit off these things. I pay the authors, I pay the editor, I pay the cover artist, and I pay for the printing of the books. Anything that I make extra do not go into my pocket. It goes directly into publishing more books for Library of the Living Dead Press and Library of Horror Press. And speaking of that, we need some stories for Vampology. And that is a 6K word maximum short story about, guess what, vampires. Library of Horror Press has also started Horrorology. Say that three times real fast. And it is going to contain 6K word maximum stories about any damn thing that's horror. And I mean anything. Creepy, suspense, monsters, werewolves, anything that your little undead and horror-filled mind can come up with. Accepting them now. Send them to lohpress@yahoo.com. And if you want to just send something to me and just general bullshit, send that one to my email at lotld@yahoo.com. And for yous all good guys that are listening to the podcast, please join the forum. We're having us a hell of a good time there. That's found at www.libraryofthelivingdead.lafora.com. We has us a good time. All good members. Because we don't put up with shit on this forum. And now, as we always do, we're going to go out with a song.
Baby, is your daddy home? Do you wanna go with me all alone to the lake? I got a bad desire. Oh, 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 I'm on fire. Do you hear that man on the radio? There are murderers loose, honey. We'd better go to that house with that man and his wife. Don't you worry, we'll be fine. Stairs got real pale skin and eyes full of death. But the new guy says we're gonna take this key and go to the gas pump. Maybe you'll see it's okay. We'll escape just fine. Oh, oh no, we're on fire. Oh, oh no, we're on fire. No, we're wrong.
good librarians, one more thing before we end the podcast. Well, hell, the podcast really is ended. But I'm going to say one more thing. I want to thank Miko for being the music librarian and hooking me up with all of these cool-ass songs that I put in between all of the stories. Thank you, Miko. You rock my undead world.